Hello and welcome to the Transcending CRM podcast, a show where we explore how the Salesforce ecosystem has impacted the careers of fellow trailblazers and the businesses that have leveraged dynamic growth from the platform. This podcast is brought to you by Silverline, an Emphasis company. Silverline is a Salesforce digital transformation consultancy headquartered in New York City, specializing in financial services, media and entertainment, and healthcare industries. I'm your host, JP Owens, Managing Director of Banking and Lending at Silverline. Today, unfortunately, I'm not joined by my co-host, Elliot Spence. He took the day off for his birthday. He is heading to Indianapolis to run a half marathon, so glutton for punishment. Good luck, Elliot. But today, I am excited to be joined by Paul Seo from Republic Finance. Paul has over two decades of experience harnessing the power of data and has made it his mission to empower organizations worldwide. His career has been defined by a relentless pursuit of excellence and a commitment to driving growth and innovation through the strategic use of technology. Throughout his journey, Paul has led the change in revolutionizing reporting and analytics, reshaping data architecture, and optimizing critical business processes across diverse industries. His vision for implementing enterprise-grade business intelligence and workflow applications has been a catalyst for transformative change within organizations like Republic Finance and others. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Glad that we can finally catch up. I know we've been working together here for a number of years, and there's a lot of stories we could probably talk about from our experience working together, but I'd love to start off the show with you telling us a little bit more about yourself personally and how you ended up at Republic Finance. What led you there?
So personally, I began my career mainly at HSBC, coming out of Virginia Tech, having a systems engineering background. So I was more of a process engineer, and that's the way that I thought about it. So I joined HSBC as a process analyst. And from there, my career grew in different aspects, from analytics to modeling, managing dialogue operation, and eventually ending up in the wealth management space where I led their analytical efforts as well as the information management. And eventually kind of that grew into data warehouse, and data warehouse eventually led into BIs, BIs eventually led into the overall data governance, and so on and so forth. So over the past two decades or so, my professional career spanned across from, I guess, the application itself, from user experience, all the way to the core applications utilization by the operational folks, from working for HSBC, Marshall McLennan Companies, IBM. And when I met Ian, it was when I was with IBM doing work for a client in downtown. Was something very similar. I would describe it best as solution architecting. And then one thing fell out next to each other that he was looking for a talent in my area. And we knew each other from HSBC days, and one thing led to the other. Here I am 5 years after. So that's the kind of the history.
So here you are at Republic Finance. Can you walk us through your journey in your 5 years roughly at Republic Finance? Where'd you start out and what were you focused on versus where you are now?
Sure. Initially, when I joined, it was under the premise that I will be building a data warehouse specifically designed for us to be able to do risk analytics. So I joined as a credit infrastructure lead, building, in essence, a data warehouse that all the risk team used to build decision engine, to conduct performance analysis, to generate operational reports, so on and so forth. That led to eventually expanding my wings, so to speak, designing the front end, which is the e-app, we call it. It is an application used by the branches to actually process applications, optimizing that. So I was a part of the team leading through the conversion of the old e-app that is heavily manual and semi-automated using the new e-app. And then that kind of grew into designing a workflow app that is being used, heavily used by central ops to automate a lot of back-end operations that were previously heavily, heavily manual. And to a large extent, it still is. And my boss asked me, got a call one day, so you need to manage IT. And that was 2.5 years ago, back in April. And at that point, we were going through a significant pressure from the growth of the business as a result of having poor infrastructure. So good news is that we were growing. Bad news is that we were just suffocating by the weight of our success, so to speak. And then in addition to taking on new digital roadmap that allowed us to get into Salesforce, hence the reason why we met. And that's when we met and began to work together.
So let's start with the data warehouse, because I feel like this is a topic we're constantly having conversations about. And I know when we were out at Dreamforce, when you were speaking at lunch, this was something people really wanted to dive a little bit deeper in. And we hear terms often about data warehouse, MDM, data lake, data lakehouse. Walk me through your strategy of kind of where you started and where you've ended up to really drive the data, the analytics, the infrastructure for some of the workflow and solutions you've been focused on.
So because of my experience in the credit infrastructure, that gave us insight into the amount of challenges that our current risk and analytical teams undergo, whether it be operational reports, portfolio analysis, risk analytics, or with decision engine modeling, I think it gave me a unique opportunity to understand the pain points. And the way that I thought about it is, as we begin to take on Salesforce, it's not about the Salesforce, but what information needed to be fed into Salesforce. And that automatically connected that to the analytics. At the end of the day, omnichannel, all this data, the value creation happens when we use the insight to do something. And that's when I begin to kind of separate the pieces together and say, okay, Salesforce is going to be a delivery mechanism, and data has to be the actual content that delivers that value, right? So I think my advantage was that fact that I understood the need for what that analytics is, having gone through the different parts of the businesses and functions from previous companies, as well as understanding what it is that we did, where it is the decisions we made. And so I began there, trying to really begin to piece apart what are the different parts of the analytics and reports and data we need to be concerned about and do that. So genesis of what the end state looked like, I guess, is the message. Is that you need to know what are you going to do with it. Are you trying to operationalize a process? Or are you trying to provide an analytics that will be used to make a decision? It matters what your end state was. And I think me having seen the end state helped for me to kind of construct that. And then the initial part of the data really began with understanding the state of our current data at that time when we began. You got to remember, we were operating on a DB6 backend loan management system with data governance structure that is partially documented. So any transformation that has occurred throughout the 20 years or so that system has been alive, tracing those things back and trying to validate how they have morphed is going to be a long and very arduous task. So we knew that that's not what we're going to do. So from there, we need to first understand what is the first thing that we need to do. You know, my brain automatically went to, okay, if I need to do one thing, what is the one thing that I need to do? And that kind of fell back into my wealth management days. When I was in wealth management days, I was exposed to different types of analytics that I never thought about until then. Customer lifetime value proposition, for example. It was interesting how wealth managers looks at any engagement with a client from the overall duration of that engagement. And based on the duration of that engagement, they specifically target investment products that fits that age or that aspect. It's common sense now, but back then it was just kind of like, I never thought about it, but it makes sense. In essence, this is exactly what we were trying to do. Back then, we were just doing it manually. How do I time this thing? So in essence, Salesforce kind of allowed us to deliver that. So that allowed me to figure out, okay, if we're going to do that, that means that I need something that's going to allow me to connect my dots across the time series, as well as the various aspects of the function, whether it be payment history, loan origination, marketing condition, actual decisions we made, whatever it is, I need to be able to vertically slice that timeline, but also be able to trace that timeline across the spectrum. How am I going to do that? They can't all live in one place, so I need some sort of like a key that will allow me to kind of piece together and then figure out how I'm going to sustain that weight and speed and performance later. For now, let's figure out this key component. That's where the Global ID came in.
Global ID was the first big victory from your data perspective. Was that fair to say?
I would say not a victory of the war, but certainly of the battle. It's something that we're still fighting through, partially because our current system does not allow certain controls that is common these days. For example, if you decide to put your name into Social Security, it will tell you that's incorrect. That's not such a thing for us. So there is a level of data integrity that we just simply cannot perform, which means I have to handle most of it at the back end.
And that's due to your legacy systems, right? That's something we're going to probably solve with some of the Salesforce stuff, where we can have some data validation and upfront requirements more consistently across those front-end systems, ideally.
Yeah, certainly the systematic way to enforce a governance or policy helps. And then something like Salesforce that allows us to deliver those policy in a centralized fashion helps. But the first thing we need to decide was, okay, what is the truth then? If you're telling me there's multiple versions of it, tell me which one it is. So there's a lot of governance, control, even the controlling of the distribution at the other end where people actually use these numbers. You need to kind of reel them in to make sure they follow the same process. So that journey is still undergoing. It's going to take a while to rewind that back to the going through the same pipeline as it should. So that was a big part.
But getting back to what you were saying in the beginning is you got to know what you want to do with it. So you knew you had a vision for what you were going to do with the data, and part of that required the global ID and a number of other things. So as you're working on that, when did it become clear that you needed to upgrade some of the front-end systems and the distribution channels? And what led you to the evaluation of platforms, which ultimately you selected Salesforce, which is why we're talking. Can you take us through the timeline of the data work and recognizing when you needed to find the right solution and then ultimately making that decision?
Right. So the first thing was that we knew that we cannot store the current loan management and loan origination data in the ecosystem that is heavily, heavily data center centric for a number of different reasons, which meant that we needed to be able to create a safe ecosystem within the cloud. So the first thing that we did was to make sure that we don't leave the back door open. So I spent a lot of time securing it, making sure that all the cybersecurity controls were in place, and start creating like a new ecosystem in the cloud by following all the protocol we should. And then the second part was, okay, now I need to create a place to put all this data that I'm going to somehow copy from ABS or our current on-prem data, and then I need to move it to the cloud. So I need to put a storage, so create a data lake. This is just a raw storage. Just everything as is. My philosophy was I don't want us to touch any raw data. I want us to put everything into a single bucket. We will then figure out what we're going to do with it. So that was the philosophy in short. So we say, okay, we're going to create a bucket. We're just going to dump it, in essence, create a data lake. At that point, we decided, all right, at this point, we're going to do two things. We are going to create a two separate pipeline. One pipeline is going to support operation, and the other one is going to support all the reporting and analytics that doesn't have to be near real time ever. Sure, it could be close, but there's no need to be near real time, right? So we began to think that through and said, all right, the initial phase was to use the Azure Data Lake and subsequently Databricks, which is what we did to enable and to make sure that the performance of our current data warehouse or data centers can sustain the weight that we're going to put it as we turn on the synchronization. Because you can remember, I'm pumping data from, think of it like a lawnmower engine, and I'm pushing all this data. Currently, I'm keeping up with it somewhat. And then as this thing gets turned on, I have a completely another pipeline. Now I need to ship all this data up to you cloud. The question that we weren't sure is, can this engine sustain that weight without cradling the current BAU operation? So to do that, we used Azure primarily because that's the environment that we were in. We didn't need to explore AWS. I'm sure there are benefits to it. We're going to stick with it. Simpler, faster, easier. We're going to go with that route. So we need to get that going first. Now, we also knew that the turning on Kafka near real time for the operational feed, it will begin to cradle the internal system. Batch loading up to the data lake, sure, we can handle it. But when we begin to tap into near real time to start feeding and streaming data, our current system simply could not handle it. So we intentionally built a way to push analytical data through the data lake, then came up with an interim way to shift the weight from on our current on-prem systems, so you can begin to separate and put different ecosystem or infrastructure to handle the weight better. Primarily our investment into Pure, because our vSAN or the virtual memory system couldn't handle the weight. So when that was done, now we can begin to stream is when we brought in the Kafka as a second phase. Since then, we haven't made a transition to use Snowflake versus Data Lake or Databricks. I think that was primarily because of the cost reasons. for the types of processing that we were handling, not because of the capability. And we're currently turning on Kafka to stream and synchronize data between the ABS and the FSC Salesforce. Now, one key investment that we did make is the MuleSoft API, which I think we need to hit, because that's a costly investment. And exactly where is the valuation of that investment that you have made? The idea is this. Eventually, when we finish with the environments that we set it up, we are going to open up our development environment in such a way that all our developers and data scientists can create their compartmentalized sandbox that, in essence, will look, smell, feel, and behave just like a small production ecosystem, like a miniature version. Think of it that way. So if I need to hook up a new data source, run a new model, pump it through the production system to see if there's going to have any impact, they will be doing all that on their own without having to ever rely on IT up to the point of production. For me to do that, I needed to streamline all the APIs. Does that make sense? I have to be able to, for them to drag and drop, for them to connect and develop without me being involved. So the first thing I did was, all right, if that's the way I'm thinking about this, then we first need to make sure everything going in and out of Salesforce is going to be done by one system. And that whatever that one system is going to give me a three different layers that I can control. How I interact with the customers, day-to-day operational that I need to manage, and all the basic fundamental things the systems need to do. And the API, MuleSoft API framework, fit just that idea. And at that point, and the fact that it's part of the Salesforce, okay, everything just kind of clicked, it's worth the premium.
So to summarize kind of the history of your journey at Republic Finance so far, is you spent a couple of years on the data work, at least up front, getting ready, getting prepared, recognizing what you needed to do with that data. You made some investments in systems like Azure for your data lake, Databricks, Snowflake, as well as MuleSoft to really unlock the potential of how you're going to leverage that data, whether it be real time or otherwise, but to give your team the tools that they're going to need to scale. And then now we're kind of getting to the point of the Salesforce conversation of financial services cloud, marketing cloud as well, and just how that's all going to come together to feed your program long term. But before we talk specifics, can you talk a little bit about the philosophy of the building blocks that you've instituted for what this program and ecosystem is going to be foundationally supported by?
So really, the idea is based on three key swim lanes, if you want to kind of look at it that way. One of the ecosystem is, however, and whatever we did, it has to allow us to figure things out faster than anyone else. So we're turning this near real-time thing on. So the data is going to begin to flow near real-time. We need to have better handle on our analytics, not only analytics, but figuring out areas that are beginning to open up as a result of some of the advancements that are happening, whether it be AI or ML. So there's an operations analytics, meaning how many switches did I process? Where is the bottleneck? How should I streamline that? That's straight through discrete analytics. That is given. With the Salesforce as a delivery mechanism, you should be able to do that with your eyes closed. And then there's a predictive analytics using the propensity models like propensity to purchase, probability to purchase, and be able to customize and send different information to the sales agent to be able to increase their effectiveness is also given. But there's this whole behavioral thing that's been turned on. The mobility, the utilization of the apps, the geofencing using the physical devices they carry around, people are willing to share for deals. All this information that are opening up, you need to harness that information somehow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so we talked a lot about the data, building that foundation. We've got the swim lanes of how you're going to leverage all of it. And this definitely wasn't a multi-year kind of one big release project. There's been many, as we said earlier, kind of victories as we've gone through the program. So you've got the data, you got that organized, you got that to a state to where you can start to feed something like Financial Services Cloud. You're unlocking some real-time insights with MuleSoft. But can you talk a little bit about the projects that you've kind of executed to date? Because the first project was more foundational, I would say, around CRM. And then now you mentioned earlier about the workflow engine and eApp. That's really the next phase. So can you talk us through how you've laid out the phases of work to really enable the capabilities for your organization?
Yeah, so first phase was to make sure that our current system or infrastructure can handle the cloud synchronization. To do that, we built out an Azure ecosystem, including the Salesforce ecosystem, and began to batch load that data up to FSC and synchronize that data to see if we can use and handle about 85% of the load management that we currently perform with nothing else in between. And then using that 85% of the load management data, we began to operate productionalized marketing cloud, because at that point you can. So that was the initial phase one. Phase two was kind of really address the front end or the middle part. So we got the Salesforce marketing cloud turned on, and then we have loan management after that books got turned on, but loan origination in the middle was blank. We were using an on-prem system. So at that point we had to decide, all right, how are we going to do this? There was a couple of options in front of us. We can build this on our own. We can use or leverage an ecosystem that is already out there. So we looked at nCino and other products that are available out there and came to the conclusion that the level of customization that we would need to do to the loan origination apps is too much. At the end of it, might as well build it ourselves. And at that point, the lights turned on about the OmniScript or OmniStudio. And the reason why I gravitated towards that is its ability to design widgets and insert widgets as a part of a process engineering. So using that as a foundation, because eventually loan origination is about the process. It's about inserting new analytics to drive behavior. It's about inserting new policies that need to be followed. It's about inserting new models that can be used. Whatever it is, there's constantly moving things around loan origination app, because in essence, that's the process that every sales agent used to generate and book loans. Does that make sense? So building out EF 3.0, we call it, was a huge part. And during the same time, we also had to enable near real time using Kafka. MDM had to get productionalized. Much more work on the MuleSoft had to be done, in addition to transitioning many of the Databricks work to Snowflake to begin to deliver reports, to begin to show reports. Additionally, we also did paperless. So everything from loan origination, from actually the adverse action letter generation to the policies you check, all the way out to the documents that it generates to sign and ultimately deposit, that the entire portion being 100% end-to-end paperless was another part that we took on as part of the continuation or the phase two. And we are ready to close that out by the end of the year. And that will be first part of the major, I guess, closure to a development heavy cycle.
So it answers it perfectly. And as we think about this, this was no small undertaking. I think you hit on a couple of the solutions you've had to purchase. There's definitely been partners involved to help you deliver this. You've been building your own team around it. There's been other things happening. But can you talk a little bit about the business case or the ROI you and the team put together related to how this whole program was going to come together, at least on the low end, just some rough numbers around, was it around the front end of the cycle? Is it the middle office and the operational efficiency, or is this really a growth play for recognizing the value?
Sure. I mean, I think there are the black and whites, which is paperless, that drives in enough hard saves from copy, papers, toners, storage, all those things simply by getting rid of it, that will justify the investment, capital investment, not license usage, investment in 2 to 3 years. So that was one part. The other part is time saves through all the automation features. There was another part. The third part is the conversion of what we call live chat, which is the actual physical solicitation to cash or check that will allow us to leverage that to build a relationship with customers. That live chat conversion through the automation, follow-ups, better marketing, so on and so on and so forth. There was an estimated uptick from that. But really the key thing is what I call multiplier effect. What that is, the increase in digital campaign and leads from the digital automation will lead to increase in number of leads that will be going to our pre-qual site, increasing that and better experience and automation follow-up through that and loan origination process using the new OmniStudio will increase our number of book loans. Increased number of book loans will subsequently be managed through the better Salesforce system with Omnichannel and follow-ups and all that will allow us to retain, which is renewal, maintaining and continue to growing the relationship. All that combined together is what I think will pay for the the overall investment. We anticipate break even in less than 2 years. Not only that, I also anticipate that our growth or net impact will exponentially increase as we begin to get richer with the amount of information that we have. As we get smarter with the types of analytics we can do, we can get fat as we get faster with the types of adjustment that we can make to operations and so things of that nature. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
And it sounds like a lot of the things you're anticipating are the things you know today, but I know there's also the idea of growing and scaling without some of the physical locations as well. Has some of that been factored into maybe some of the unknown, especially like, so the physical locations being kind of where you're at today, but you can also expand beyond that. And then the other potential is probably a little bit of a leading question to what's next is around the overall ecosystem and other touch points, whether it be payments or otherwise. Can you talk a little bit about how there's additional items maybe that are going to help you expand even further?
Yeah, I mean, I think as I kind of alluded to, this is phase two. We have a number of docket things on phase three that will allow us to really leverage what we have built. I mean, up to this point, I think it's a foundational blocks, particularly from the ecosystem perspective. I think our analytical engine is just getting powered up, to be honest. So we have that consolidation app that's going to allow us to expand a model or a number of options we can present to our customers as we get into our offer section. There is payment reengineering that will allow us to productize the credit decision engine as well as a way for the prospects to process payments and disperse payments. In essence, they will allow us to do things like I walk into Lowe's, I'm low on balance, I scan QR code, go through a 5-minute processing process. By the time I come to cash the door, I have a card that I can use or an e-card or money in my bank account that I can produce right there and then. Things like that is made possible. And you can do that without having to invest significantly because all the pipes are there. It's just turning things on. So there's a number of things that we are planning on doing using the foundation that we have built to really amplify the growth that will come from it. I think limitation really is about our imagination, to be honest, and how smart and well we could get. Because I think it's things that people want to do, they simply cannot. Now, I think if we build this the right way, we should be able to see the fruit of that labor quite soon, hopefully. What I'm most excited about is behavioral analytics. I mean, I always say this and tout this, and I could be very wrong about this, but this game, this whole battle and competition that's happening across industries when it comes to digitization and all these fancy words they're throwing around, I think it comes down to whoever figures out the behavior analytics and learn how to operationalize that and use that information and operational nimbleness, if you want to call it that, and be able to either inform and anticipate customers' needs to provide white glove service, or use that in terms of generating new leads and customers to generate business. Behavior analytics, that right there is the key in operationalizing that. And I think that is the reason why the Salesforce is where it is. It's for that purpose. It is tip of the spear, not the spear itself. And I think recognizing that as a value and what we have built, then kind of moving into next phase. Phase three is, I want to see this thing grown. I can't wait. We already have proof of concept in place where we can begin to figure out how to store the behavioral data because it's a very different type of data. It's not anything that you're used to. It's free-flowing. And we talked about this. And there is, remember the whole this big data conversation that used to move around? Right. This, in essence, yeah, is the same thing. Is we need to figure out and learn how to harness that. So we have a good partner who's going to show us how to do that. And then really figure out how to operationalize it. Initially, our POC is about sending a welcome banner. Simple as that. Just simple. You land. I know who you are. I'm going to customize the banner to fit your life journey and where about where you are. And I'm going to give you a personalized banner welcoming you. But that allows us to check a lot of things that we're trying to test out. And it's the beginning of, I think, something that could be very, very powerful. So I'm looking forward to seeing that.
So that's what you're most excited about. But knowing that there's a lot potentially that you could do here in the near future. Let's look back a little bit and let's talk about maybe what are you most proud of? And I want to frame it in regards to, I know we've talked and we've gone to a number of Dreamforces and other events and you've talked to tons of peers, but as you've been kind of hearing from others in your role across the industry, what are you most proud of so far that you've accomplished that you feel like you're ahead of the game or you look back and go, we did this right and people are trying to catch up?
Well, candidly, I'm not proud of anything at the moment.
All right, fair.
Because at the end of the day, you gotta deliver. And we still have, what, month and a half left. So I don't want to start patting myself on the back or anyone until that. Having said that, under the assumption that we do deliver to the level that I'm driving everybody to, I am really proud of the team. I'll be honest with you. You're talking about 11 vendors swimming in parallel to do the amount of transformation that it needs to happen across the organization. If you think about the areas that we have touched, everything from finance, legal and compliance, operation, loan management, loan origination, marketing, analytics, data management, infrastructure, there isn't a part that we haven't touched and transformed. And the amount of number of different people, the vendors, the partners that came together to a single mission. And where we are currently as a team and where there are no different shirts that are being worn. I really am very proud of that. Hopefully we'll deliver, but we are clicking. We are gelling and everybody's swimming and rowing at the same direction. And I don't know if the appreciation for amount of lift that we have done is really out there. And nor is it fair for me to expect that kind of appreciation because they don't understand fully. But that said, for someone who do understand, I think, wow, the amount of lifting that we have done. So I'm proud of that. Proud of what team together and proud that they didn't kill me, create a mutiny after 2.5 years. So I'm proud of that. But at the end of the day, once we deliver, even then, I don't think I'll be able to say I'm proud of how we team together. But product, I don't think I'm ever going to be really satisfied because I see so many things already that could make it better and be utilized better. And this, and I don't like to boast about product, but this is where Salesforce gives me that flexibility. And one other question I think that we're being asked often is why Salesforce? What made you decide on the Salesforce? It is the maturity of the FSC data model and the maturity of the UI, but most importantly, my ability to manipulate the UI based on the analytics from the data that I harness. That is the most important part. Not only can I deliver it in a quality fashion, I can insert whatever I want. So if you think about, I got 1,000 people running and rowing in a single direction, because if you think about that, every day people come in, and I spent a number of years in HR analytics to tangentially weave off. And every year we perform survey analytics. And two things were always top two, always top two, sometimes interchange. One is manager, obviously. Two is the system, right? System is the reason why people lead, right? So not only for the customers, but both for us internally as well. So the way I was thinking about that is, well, if I have a single rail, that will allow me to study all these behaviors and literally make a change the way that it's being operated by 1,000 people on every day using all the empirical evidence that I have behind the scenes and literally turn their ship around on a dime. How powerful would that be? From marketing all the way to special ops, where the analytics just completely connects the dots and the entire life cycle is optimized. Not just marketing, but I remember when I was in underwriting days or the underwriting days, I remember there was a conflict between underwriting approvals to portfolio performance because sales want to generate sales, underwriters want to control risk. So it's a natural friction that comes from that. But what if the system allows us to connect those dots and just go at it and tune this thing up as an entire ecosystem and optimize the analytics on it and make decisions accordingly? And that's where my brain went. If my brain went there, at that point, I need a single system of record and I needed ability to move things around and change it. That was the reason why FSC won.
Well, and I want to go back for a second. You did talk about how you were most proud of the team. Can you talk a little bit more about how you've assembled your team to help get you to where you are and how you're thinking about the team evolving going forward?
Oh my God, that's a loaded question. I'll be honest with you, half the time I didn't know what I was doing. People are such a X factor. I had a lot of difficulties in many areas. I still do. There are certain areas that worked out really, really well. But when I was structuring the team, what I did and can and is under my control is how I organize. So I spent a lot of time organizing the work that needed to be done, thinking through areas that needed to be addressed. But you have to remember, my team organization or team structure had to be in many ways two separate worlds, because the BAU had to go on and build out an entire new ecosystem to be able to do what we currently do. It was not going to be an year-long process. It was going to take multi-years. And meanwhile, our BAU operational world was crumbling. We went through literally entire network shutdown for over a day because we just couldn't figure out what was going on. So from people's perspective, I had to kind of figure out, all right, I got to get this whole new thing up and running, but I need to build a bridge, but I also need to figure out what I'm going to do in the BAU to make sure that we don't go out of business, in essence, that people who are selling out loans, who are collecting on payments, who are processing our taxes can do their job. How do I do that? So the reason why I say it's loaded is because I think my situation was not just to build out the CRM functionality. But having said that, what I did know is that there needs to be a centralized role who can think in a very different areas of the need for the program. So even in that area, we had a little bit of difficulty in that area. So what I can say is who you pick, which vendor you pick, and how lucky you are during the selection process, in many ways, is rolling the dice. The best names that I've been interacted with, best brands that I've been part of and have seen, even at IBM when I was part of that culture, you roll the dice with the people that you get. It comes down to people. And what I try to do is I have no saying in people. What I can do is organize what it is that needs to be done. What are the areas that need to be addressed? You don't need to be an Einstein to know that. That you can figure out pretty quickly and make sure that you hold on to the values that you have, qualities and expectations you have, and try to be as transparent and as big of a pain in the butt as you can. And then find partners who are willing to listen to you and not fight the logic on why you're saying that, and who are willing to change the personnel, who are willing to change the way they are trying to do things. And you got to remember, currently at Paperless, 11 vendors, they all have their way of doing things. Every one of them walk in, here's how we do things. Now you have to somehow convince them that for the good of the whole, you need to follow our process. And that takes a little convincing. So you got to look for the partners who are willing to do that. Even from Silverline, who's program managing for us, to Salesforce, to DocuSign, to eOriginal, to Highland, to Tantra, to everybody. And it takes what I call grinding. You run through people until you find the person that fits the way that you operate. And we operate based on very clear responsibility, accountabilities, and all those things that you talk about on textbooks. But that's the way we operate.
Well, I like how you said the way we are going to do things. I think as part of being a part of this from day one over the last couple of years, I think the collective we all had to figure out how to operate, and we didn't all start operating the same way on day one. But like you said, we are gelling and everybody seems to be working together. And I think everybody figured out the right way to kind of drive to what you need. So that's been fun to watch coming together from my perspective as well.
Yeah, and also in some ways, I take that as my responsibility, my direct responsibility. My job is to make sure that these different ways of doing things and different egos, different skill sets, different way of thinking come together to a single deadline, and we deliver. That's my job, to be able to do that. So at the end of the day, as I said, it comes down to, can I deliver when I said I'm going to deliver? If I fail, then I didn't do my job well enough. If I did, then I did okay.
Well, it sounds like we've got a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months before maybe everybody who's listening to this will hear more about the story of getting this to the finish line and getting phase two complete and hearing more about it. So we'll all keep an ear out for that. But before we wrap up today, Paul, I did want to ask you the last question, which we ask everybody who joins the show is, can you share a fun fact about yourself that not many people know? It could be an accomplishment, a talent, a fun, or an unbelievable story, but would love to hear what your fun story or fun fact is before we wrap up today.
I used to have a really long hair. Even when I met my wife, I had a black riding jacket and rode a motorcycle.
When you say long hair, how long?
Down to the middle of my back, long hair.
Ponytail, top knot?
Oh, how are God, you? Yeah. I was the envy of all the girls that I met. They said I had the most beautiful long hair. So there we go.
Long hair, motorcycle, and leather jacket. All right. Is there photo evidence?
There is somewhere, but I will never share it with you. when I was growing up, I wanted to be a professional soccer player. That's another aspect. And I was pretty good until I realized I had no talent. And then what's another aspect? Oh, I was in the U.S. Army for 4 years, and I spent 2 years in Japan. And then finished off in Virginia. So those are the fun facts that many people don't know me.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. I will definitely follow up on the photo evidence at some point. Maybe we can surface that later. But I really appreciate you taking time to come on the show and talk about what you've been doing so far. And hopefully for anybody listening, they'll keep an eye out for you at future conferences and events and hopefully try to connect and hear more about your story. So thank you again.
Excellent. I really appreciate it. I'm humbled by your invitation. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you all for listening and tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. To learn more about Silverline, you can subscribe to the Silverline blog at silverlinecrm.com or follow on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook at SilverlineCRM, one word. Thanks, everybody.